Welcome to this week's episode of Rise and Shine, the weekly public affairs program on 93.1 The Wolf. I'm your host, Tammy. Happy Father's Day. So here's something I was thinking about. Moms talk about being a mom all the time. We tell our labor and delivery stories to anyone who will listen, especially unsuspecting pregnant women. We talk about our kids and what it's like to parent them nonstop with friends, coworkers, and even strangers if they're willing to listen. But it struck me that you don't often hear dads having these conversations, probably because we moms don't ever give them a chance to get a word in edgewise. So I thought it would be interesting and kind of sweet to let some dads have the floor and talk about, well, being a dad. These guys are some of my favorite dads. And for this conversation, I like that they're in different phases of the parenting journey. I'll let them introduce themselves.
My name's Jason. I have two girls named Cora and Grace, who are 7 and 5, respectively.
My name is Nathan, and I have two boys, Liam and Micah, who are 7 and 5, respectively.
And Mike?
My name is Mike. I have 3 kids, a 16-year-old son, a 15-year-old daughter, and a 10-year-old son.
Who shall remain nameless.
Jacob, Maria, and Joshua.
I'm Elton, Tammy's husband. I have 3 kids that I know of. Andrew, the oldest, he's 23. Carly, the middle, she's 21. Laura will soon be 19.
So what I want to know first is, what was your first thought when you found out you were going to be a dad? And you can just, whoever wants to jump in first can. I'm not going to call on you.
Let me go first because I'm the elder.
This will be a long story.
We don't know how much longer I have at any point in time.
That's true.
Time is a ticking. My first thought, as I remember, was utter terror. It wasn't even a coherent thought. It was just sheer terror coursed through my veins. And then the thought came, you've got to be kidding me. There's no way I am ready to be a dad. That lasted for 24 hours. I went to bed that night, still terrified, woke up the next day. I was like, all right, let's do this. So, but yeah, initial thought, terror, sheer terror.
Anyone else?
I think when I first found out, I immediately went into like prepper mode. Like what, you know, am I prepared? Okay, I'm not prepared. What are the steps I need to take to get prepared? And then I guess you suddenly realize no one's ever prepared you to get prepared for this. You know, there is no so-called manual and, you know, there's not a right or wrong way to get prepared for it. And it was just like, okay, how do I get from point A to point B and how do I gather everything in between?
It took us a while to have our first. So when we got the news, we were like, yeah. But, you know, kind of like Jason said, you're not really prepared, even if you think you are, until that child shows up and then kind of a switch flips and you're like, all right, I'm a dad now and I have these things to do. So prior to that, I knew a baby was on the way, but you still kind of go through life as if it's not. It's like, oh, I'm just going to do my own thing and the belly's getting bigger, but whatever. But so I never really felt anything truly happen until Liam was born.
And everyone's telling you, oh, you got 9 months, you know, you got all this time to get everything together. But in the back of my head, it's just tick, 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 tick. You know, like it's going to be here before you know it. It's almost like that whole feeling of Christmas when Christmas passes and you're like, oh, you know, we've got so long to Christmas, and you turn around and it's like September and October and everybody's Christmas shopping. So,
yeah. Alton, I imagine another one of your first thoughts was, well, I guess I got to marry her now.
In our defense, we were already engaged. We were well on our way to being married. We weren't actively trying to get pregnant. We weren't actively trying not to get pregnant.
We all know how that part works.
And then he met his wife.
Right, right, which was really awkward. So, Mike, how about you? What was your first thought when you found out you're going to be a dad? or feeling. It doesn't have to be necessarily a thought.
No, I mean, it was, we were married 5 years before we decided to start having kids.
It's the mature, responsible way to do it.
Yeah, you know, we want to make sure the marriage is going to last a little while, too. And
it's the poor way to do it.
Exactly. And so when we decided we were going to, you know, try to have kids, it was like the first month it happened. And I had so many friends, like Nathan said, we had tried for a while. And so we were both expecting this to be kind of this process, and it was going to take a while. So we went out to dinner one night, and Beth laid it on me. She was like, I got a surprise for you. And she gave me this present. And I was just like, what is this present? I was like, there was no, you know, anniversaries. There was no holidays. So I pulled it out, and it was a picture frame, and it had in there baby Giannopoulos, and it had the due date or whatever. I was like, holy cow, you know, but it was, I remember thinking that was quick. and man, like, what have we gotten ourselves into? Because we had gotten into a pretty good rhythm for 5 years, you know, of just her and I, and, you know, I had ministry and church stuff, and she was graduated law school at this point and was getting into her practice. And so we were in a nice little groove. And then it's just like, wow, are we really doing this? You know, this is going to obviously change a lot.
Yeah, definitely. That was very sweet. She gave you a nice little frame picture. I just threw the pregnancy test at him and said, look what you did to me. That was my gift to him.
That was the third one.
Yeah, that was with Laura.
That was Laura.
There were expletives for sure, too. Okay, so women, we love to tell about, you know, our birth story and, oh, we were in labor for so long and blah, 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 blah. But I never hear, like, dads tell the story of that day. So
dads tell their birth story?
Yeah, tell me your birth story. Tell me about the day.
There I was in the stirrups.
Tell me about the day that you became a dad. What was that all about? What was that like?
I had a headlamp on.
Like a miner. Had a canary ready to go.
My wife had two miscarriages before we were pregnant with our first that we were going to go to birth with, and she was being induced, so we were there at, I think it was 5:30 that morning. It was a long few hours. You know, they tell you to get there so early, and then they check you in, and it's like they got to have this War and Peace catalog of forms to get you in there to have a baby. So we go in, and then once everything sort of gets started, you know, they give the induction medicine, and they give her the pain medicine later, the epidural. And unfortunately for her, the first epidural did not take. It was incorrect. It was inserted incorrectly. So they had to, you know, she's still experiencing all this pain, and the anesthesiologist comes through, and he says, how are you feeling? She's like, oh, I mean, I'm still hurting. And he said, you should not be. So he checked her out and realized it was inserted incorrectly. So they redid it. She felt some relief. And when the time came, you know, we did not find out from our doctor whether we were having a girl or a boy.
Oh, wow.
So when, you know, everything we had was the neutral, you know, gray and yellow, and everyone hated it because everybody wants to buy, you know, I want to pamper this baby. So we were in there, and the doctor comes in. It's time for the baby to be born. She pushes and she pushes for a while, and then when the baby came out, he flips the baby over, and he says, you have a baby girl. And I didn't, you know, all I wanted was a healthy baby because we had two miscarriages. And when I did not know you could feel that feeling. I mean, when he rolled that baby over and he told me it was a little girl, I mean, I about cry now thinking about it. But, I mean, just that miracle right there looking up at you, and you're essentially the first face that baby gets to see.
Poor thing.
I know. And then they torment me for the rest of my life.
Right.
And then one of the cool parts is, you know, and this is a movie thing where you go out and you tell everybody what you had. So I actually, you know, they gave me a little band to match the baby so they know I'm the dad and all that good stuff. And so I rolled the sleeves down on my shirt and buttoned them back up, and I walk down the hallway and open the doors just like in the movie, and everybody's in the waiting room, and they're like, how is she? And I said, well. And I mean, as soon as I said well, my face just melted. I was in total tears, and I was like, it's the prettiest little girl I've ever seen. And she was.
That's precious. That's so sweet. Jason? I mean, Nate?
Whoever you are.
Whoever you are.
Introduce yourself.
That's right. I'm Nathan, and my two boys. Oh, wait, we already did that. Yeah.
Twitter handle is.
No, my Venmo handle is.
Yeah, there you go. That's right.
Quasi similar story. We had experienced one miscarriage prior to Liam's birth. And then my wife finally gets pregnant, and we're kind of okay for the first trimester or so. And then she gets preeclampsia. Mm. And then she has to stay in bed, and like things just keep kind of going downhill. And we're like, for our first one, this is what happens. Great. So she goes to a checkup, I guess, at some point in the whole ordeal. And the doctor's basically like, this baby needs to come now. And we were still a good 6 weeks out from her due date. So chaos ensues. She gets carted to the nearest hospital. They won't even let us drive there because I guess they were afraid we just weren't going to show up. So, yeah, the doctor's like, you're going to have a baby today. And so I'm calling all my parents. And, you know, we live in Georgia at this time, and all my family's up this way. So we're trying to figure out who's coming when and all that kind of stuff. And I think it was...
Who's left?
Right. I think about 8:30 that night, he showed up. She had to have a C-section, obviously, which was interesting. You ever see the sausage that hangs from... It's a lot like that.
Yeah, there were things, parts of your wife you never thought that you were going to see.
Yeah, I was like, wow, they're just putting that on her belly there. Okay, that's cool.
Operations.
Operations. So I didn't sign up for this.
Were you like, seriously, were you like terrified? Is that like that? That's a lot.
Yeah, yeah. And then just not knowing what it was going to be like to have a preemie and just what that meant and what was going to happen to him and how long he was going to have to stay and all that kind of stuff. It was crazy. But we were very fortunate that the hospital we were at, one of Beck's cousins worked in the NICU. So she got to pretty much care for Liam the whole, I think he was in there about 2 weeks, the whole time he was in there. So it was nice that he had some family with him when we couldn't be there. Mm. It was intense. He was under the little Billy Rubin lights all the time with his cool shades on.
Like a fresh batch of fries.
Right, that dude was cooking. But, you know, like Jason said, you when that child shows up, you just, you're like, man, like I had a part in that. And I remember, you know, I did sort of the dramatic waiting room entrance. Ta-da, here's a child. And then it was kind of like, but... but I remember posting something on Facebook because, you know, you got a social media blast, this kind of stuff, you know, for family who wasn't there. And I said something like, you know, Liam Kellersee, born at 8:32, weighs whatever. And then I was just kind of like, Liam, what have you done to me? And, it, you know, you just have that feeling like, man, like, not only did I have a part in creating something, but, like, now I'm responsible for this being. That minute that he was born, I became a father. It's pretty intense.
And that's the part they don't warn you about.
Right.
So a couple of real dramatic first days of the day you became a father. Mike, what was the first day you became a father like, or the day you became
my
a father?
My wife, Beth, she had a placenta abruption. Oh, at 23
Does
weeks.
Anybody in this church have a normal first pregnancy and childbirth?
There's
Yeah, that's
true. I'm glad we had our three before we started coming
here. No doubt. Clearly we had the Lord's blessing somewhere else. Okay, yes. Anyway, gosh.
So she had a placenta abruption at 23 weeks and was hospitalized for the next 12. And so, it was just a crazy 12 weeks. I mean, it felt like 12 months, literally. I mean, you know, because I was at home taking care of the house. I'd go up and spend, you know, a few hours early in the morning, come back, do work, you know, church type stuff. I had just quit like 3 weeks earlier, had quit my job and started, we were getting ready to plant a church. So I'm trying to do that, you know, in the middle of the day. Then I'd go back there and spend evening with her and then come back home and sleep. And since she wasn't around, I was the one responsible for painting the nursery and picking out the stuff and getting everything ready and hoping that she liked it. And, you know, I'd send her, you know, take pictures, and it was before digital stuff. So, you know, take a picture, get it developed, take it up there, let her look at it. And, you know, and then they decided to induce at 35 weeks. And so they felt like the baby was, you know, our son was healthy enough and that, you know, he was a good size. And so they induced, and I just remember this feeling of relief that, you know, after, you know, the 12 weeks of chaos of her being in the hospital for 12 weeks, and that finally when he was born, there was just a sense of relief that we made it. You know, mm-hmm. He made it. We made it. And that's what I remember, just this overwhelming sense of peace and relief.
So you went on to have two more kids. Mm-hmm. After that horrific experience, yeah. Was it terrifying to like think like, well, we're going to try this again?
Yeah, it was, you know, the second one was planned. I mean, we decided, you know, we wanted to try, you know, to have at least two kids. And so you were nervous, you know, especially around that 23-week mark, you know, was something else going to happen? And kind of from there till the end, it was always every little cramp she had or what, you know, it was, you're just walking on eggshells. And but that one was just smooth. I mean, mm-hmm. It was, you know, outside of just normal pregnancy, morning sickness types, you know, that type of thing. But there was no health issues at all with Beth, and Marie was great. And same thing with our third, there was no, so it was just that one kind of fluky thing that happened that first pregnancy. But the, you know, the other two, everything was great, but there was, you kind of hit that mark and you started having those triggers and worrying, you know, is something else going to happen, but it never did.
So obviously I was there for it. But from your perspective, anything interesting or that just really stood out for you on the day you became a dad?
Well, I'm pretty sure it was a Friday. As a matter of fact, I know it was a Friday. So I get off work, I come home, and of course this is before cell phones or anything, and you're like, I'm pretty sure I'm in labor. We're going to have to go to the hospital.
Okay, wait, hold on. I knew this was going to happen. It was not before cell phones. We're not 80 years old. We had cell phones.
Back in the day, get on a phone.
I know I had a cell phone with Carly.
Okay.
If I did, it was through Baker, and it was one of those great big handheld.
Yeah,
hand-held.
It was the big brick.
Yeah,
right.
The big Morris
the big Motorola.
Brick, yeah.
Anyway.
But anyway.
You get home and continue.
Anyway, she'll as usual, you know she's telling mistake. Me exactly how things are going to be. And, so about 11:30 at night, I'm sitting there trying to watch Carson and Leno, I guess. And she's like, "We have to go to the hospital." So I'm like, "Well, I guess we're going to the hospital now." So
jeez, lady.
So we go to the hospital.
She couldn't wait till the show was over.
Right.
At least the commercial
this
break.
This was before VCRs, apparently.
You need to have your Betamax set up.
So we get to the hospital. Oh, also, I'm pretty sure the NCAA tournament was going on at the time, too. Because I think I watched some basketball before I switched over to Leno. And, of course, she's selfishly over here having a baby going into labor.
Like I'm trying to watch my Laserdisc collection of Star Trek.
So we get up to the hospital, and the first thing, that nurse made Tammy so mad. I'll never forget the look on my wife's face when the nurse examines her and was like, "Oh, you're only like 3 centimeters dilated. It's going to be a while for you."
Challenge accepted.
Yeah, and it was a while. You know, that whole day, because first babies take forever. And she finally got to where she could push. And Andrew, of course, was turned the wrong way. Stubborn little thing. And so finally, after pushing to where she couldn't push anymore, the doctor went, Oh, wait a minute. He's turned the wrong way. Let's turn him right side up and get him out of there. So that's what they did. And suction cupped his head and popped him on out. And
did it sound like that?
It was kind of, it sort of, but more of a squishy. Kind of like. It was a weird sound. I can't do it. It's like part Wookiee, part. It was weird, yeah. Anyway, he was there, and he was just covered in this muck, and he had this, like, tube attached to his belly. And all of a sudden, these doctors thrusting these sharp scissors, like, cut it. And I'm like, I don't want to cut it, but I cut it.
Again, though, they don't train you for that.
No,
there's
nothing.
There's no class that they show you how to do that.
I mean, they just want you to know how to breathe, and that's
right.
It.
I'm like, and then they're like, do you want to hold him? I'm like, do you want to wipe him? I mean, I don't want to hold him right now. But, they're over there dealing with Tammy, and I don't know how y'all did it. Like, we had me, Tammy, her best friend, my mother, and Tammy's mother all in the room with us.
What?
Whoa.
Well, first of all, my wife laughs at this, but she hates it. I told everybody in my family, you were not there for the conception. You will not be there for the birth. And so it was me and my wife.
I don't blame you.
So the we second got one, on the other hand.
So the doctors over here, you know, they're taking care of Tammy, and they hand the baby to, Terry maybe first. Andrew's crying. They hand him to my mother. Andrew's crying. I'm over here trying to, you know, be with Tammy. And finally Joan gets him. He's still crying. And finally, like, Tammy's like, go get the baby because she's wanting to see the baby. So I walk over there. I said, let me see him. And he's still bawling. And I take him, and I'll never forget this. I said, boy, what are you crying about? And he recognized my voice. And that kid stopped crying on a dime, just stopped and looked me in the face like, okay, I know you. I recognize you. And then I took him over there, and I gave him to Tammy so she could hold him. But
So what has surprised you the most about being a parent?
That you start doing things that your parents did that you thought you would never do or say?
We're going to get to that. I have that question coming up. Hold that thought.
I think, you know, as I said, there's no plan or instructions on how it happens. But, you know, growing up for the first 30-something years of my life, I would kill for myself. But now, it's hard to fathom that you would kill for someone else.
Yeah.
And, you know, they don't, there's no way, I can't describe it really, but, you know, anywhere we go with my kids, you know, you're always looking out. You're watching. You know, I go get out in the parking lot, and you're like, hey, stay close to me. Watch it, you know. And you just keep an eye on them everywhere you go. And the thought that something happened to them that you would, I mean, you would defend, you know, there's that whole mother bear thing they talk about. I understand where that comes from now, but I could not fathom that before. You know, that I was not prepared to have a feeling where you would care about something so much that you would kill for it.
Yeah, I remember the first time having to pull Liam back from walking out into a parking lot or the street or whatever, and you probably yank him a little too hard, you know, but that kicks in and you have that feeling that at the same time you're so mad at them, but you're mad at them because you know what the result could have been. And so you're so angry, but there's like this feeling of love too that happens at the same time, and it's so weird.
This little creature that you both want to kill, yeah, and would kill for all at the same time.
Right.
Yeah, I got you.
Don't you know better? Because Daddy loves you.
Mine was just the once you started having multiple kids, just how drastically different they are, even though you parent the exact same way. Because I remember those 5 years before we had Jacob, I was a youth pastor, and you're going to have siblings in your youth group, and inevitably, they're completely different. And there's always the one that was just outstanding, the perfect student, and then the older, younger brother or sister that you're just like, they had to have dropped them on their head. Like, they're, you know, they're just so different. And you're just like, what did they do to that child that they didn't do to this one? And then you start having your second child and your third child, and you're parenting, you feel like the exact same way, and they are so totally different. And it's like, it's a whole new rule book for that child than what you had for the first one. And, you know, you go through these stages anyway as a parent where, you know, I don't know, they're going through the toddler stage and you're like, all right, I've got this. Well, then they move into the next stage and it's like you have to start all over. And then you learn that stage and then you feel like you're getting a handle on things and then all of a sudden they've aged into a new one. And so you do that for one child, but then the second one is going through the same stages, but in a totally different way. And it's like you've got two kids with two separate rule books that you're trying to literally learn as you go. And to me, that was the biggest shock, is that you can't parent every child the same, that, you know, you try to, and they still going to turn out just, they're going to be themselves. They have their own personalities, their own quirks and characteristics. And you just you have to adapt as much as they do.
Mm-hmm. I wish you had told me that earlier.
I think for me, I didn't realize how much you could love something that you'd never met, never seen, never really heard. You'd felt it, you know, you could feel it on the outside of the belly a little bit, but, and just the depth of it and how immediate it was, and that it doesn't go away.
Yeah.
I mean, mine are grown now. I love them just the same, probably more now. Because we've got time, we've got history, and you just don't realize going into it how much you're going to love them and how much of yourself that you willingly go, you just give away. It's like, it's yours, you know, whatever you need. It's overwhelming at times. I mean, like you were saying, Jason, it's like the thought of something, even now, Andrew's so much bigger and stronger than me. And I know he's able to take care of himself. And my girls, you know, they're very capable, but just the thought of something happening to them can paralyze you for a second. It's just, there's no stronger love, and I don't think there's no stronger fear than a parent has than just something happening to them. But if you didn't love them as much, then you wouldn't be that afraid, because it just, it cripples you, and you know it would destroy you. And you don't, and you hope you would, like, because you'd have more. You got to deal with that. But just the thought, it's crippling in a way. But yeah, just the love. I didn't realize how much you could love something. And that it doesn't divide. Like, you start having more, and you think the love would divide. Like, all right, I got to divide it by two now. But you don't, it multiplies. The one never misses, because you just multiply the love. And it I don't know. It's just that probably was the biggest surprise for me.
See, my kids will ask me, Dad, who do you love the most? And my answer is always, whoever's behaving the best.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Absolutely. Whoever eats their vegetables. Yes.
Whoever asked me the question is who I love the most. I mean, if Andrew comes up like, all right, Dad, seriously, who do you love? I'm like, you, man, come on, you're my boy. If it's Carly, I'm like, middle child, pound it. If it's Laura, I'm like, not you right now. Yeah. Not right now. Uh-uh. You'll grow back, not right now.
Oh, no. Boy.
We're in a hard stage with Laura. So I read this week that the average age someone turns into their father is 37. Have you had a moment where you thought, oh my gosh, I'm turning into my father? And what was that moment?
For me, I don't know. I can't remember anything specific, but when I say things that I know that my father has said in the past, of course, number one being, because I said so, that's one of those things where you're like, I'm never going to do that. I always want to give my kid a reason. And then it happens. You're like, because I said so. Like, okay, because I am older than you and bigger, get out of here. But there are, sometimes the way that I say something, or the inflection in my voice, or maybe just my voice in general, I hear my dad in whatever I just said, I'm like, God, I sounded just like my dad. Not just what I said, but literally, like, my voice will be my father's voice, and it freaks me out.
I'm looking it's around like Exorcist. Like, he has, like, channels.
Right.
Cold chills.
Right.
For me, I know exactly when it was. I remember the phrase I uttered. One of them, I'm pretty sure.
Do you have to censor Andrew. Yourself?
No. Okay. No, it was just, you know, how kids will whine. And I actually said, if you don't stop that whining, I'm going to give you something to whine about.
Oh, yeah.
And that came out of my mouth, and I went, oh, no.
It's happening.
No. I actually said that. I can't believe I said that.
Then the next day, you're like, don't make me turn this car around. You're like,
exactly. Oh. Exactly. You know, and it's like, it just snowballs from there. Because at the point you realize you're there, you don't fight it anymore. You're just like, I'm
just leaning into it.
I'm like, just, right. You know, I'm just leaning into it. Yeah. I'm dad now.
I have accepted my fate.
I remember the phrase. That was it. I was like, oh, no.
Jason or Mike, do you guys have a moment?
Mine aren't fun.
That's okay. It doesn't like, have to be fun.
You know, I love my father deeply, but, you know, there's times that, you know, especially when as you grow up, you like, say you're a teenager at this point, you know, you'll think, and when I'm a dad, I'm not going to treat my kid that way, or I'm not going to, you know, and then you end up doing it, you know, whether it's losing your temper or punishments that far exceed the crime, you know, you just, and then you find yourself. And so I try to, like I said, it happens with me, and then I realize it, and, you know, I'm not great at it, but I do try to sometimes reel it back and apologize.
Well, and that actually is going to lead into my next question too. And, is the way you parent your kids different from the way that your dad was with you? How are you a different dad than your dad?
This is good, because it let me piggyback and answer the other question as well. So my father and I have had a strange relationship throughout life. He made some poor choices when I was young, so I didn't get to see him a lot. And as I got older, he lives further away, and the effort's not really there to be involved. So I have made a conscious effort to be in my daughter's life, both of them. I've coached high school basketball for like 18 years, and this past season was the first season I haven't coached, because my oldest child was playing basketball at the Y, and I missed her last two games because we were in the playoffs. And she asked me, why weren't you at my game? And so I made the decision then that I'm not going to miss out on my kids for someone else. You know, granted, I love what I was doing, but it's not fair to them. And so, you know, to answer both questions, my one thing I remember of trying not to be my dad, or where I thought I was my dad, is I don't want to miss out. You know, I saw a thing the other day on social media. I think it said you have 18 summers with your kids before they're adults. And, you know, it gives me chills to talk about it, because my oldest is 7. So, you know, she's...
You're almost halfway there.
Right. So it kind of drove the nail home really, really emphatically. I just, like, it hit me, and I just sat there for a minute and thought, you know what, I got to make sure that these summers, you know, and the days that I spend with them are worthy. Is it always going to be roses? No. Am I going to pull the, don't make me turn this car around, you know, that ever popular saying, or I'll give you something to cry about, or your butt will hurt. But, you know, those that everybody's heard. But it's those times that we can miss out that I don't want to, that I learned, you know, as bad a lesson as it was for my dad, I learned that lesson. And I want to spend that time with them, so that as they're older, they still want to spend time with me.
And I like how you made, you know, the difference between like, I want to be there for my girls. But that's, I mean, that could be just like, I'm not going to divorce their wife till I'm, you know, they're 18. But you're like, I am like intentionally being present with my kids. And that's a big difference than just being there. And so I like that you recognize that.
Yeah. And it's different. Like Mike pointed out that all three of his children are different. And, you know, my girls are completely different. So me being there for one child has to be different for the other child. You know, my wife points this, she's great at pointing it out. She'll tell me, like, you know, she's trying to get your attention and spend that time with you. And because they're so different, you know, one is like me and one's like my wife, and so I can relate to one better than the other, so she helps me. And so, you know, it does take time and work to know, you know, okay, that's what I need to do for this one, or that's what I need to do for that one, because your time is going to be different. It's not the same for all of them.
Anyone else want to jump in on how you parent different from the way your dad was with you?
I always joke my dad was a Vietnam vet postal worker. And so that dad was always angry growing up.
What a combo.
Like, I'm telling you. Like I understood the term going postal. Like, I get it. And so, I mean, I grew up in a household where I felt like I was always I don't know. He was there physically, but emotionally distant. And when he was emotionally there, that emotion was anger. And so there was always just this, not fear that dad was going to hurt me anyway, but just fear if I was going to disappoint him, he was going to lash out. And so dad worked long hours. He'd come home, eat dinner, go to his garage and work on, he loves working on old cars. He'd go up there and work. So, I mean, there was most days I see my dad for like 30 minutes a day, you know, even though he was there. And so I remember, especially again, as become a teenager, I'm never going to be like that with my kids. And so, you know, when we started having kids, I've always tried to be very intentional with not just being physically present in their lives, but emotionally present. And, you know, lots of hugs, lots of I love yous, lots of I'm proud of you. You know, now the advent of texting, you got to just text them stuff all the time, just out of random things. Or, you know, if one of them wants to watch some silly Disney show, I'll sit down with them and watch it just to have that shoulder to shoulder time. And, you know, our oldest loves football. And so he's always, Dad, let's go throw football. And kind of a cool, I guess, a happy ending to the story is probably 20 years ago now, when my dad was in around 50, early 50s, my dad came to know the Lord, and it drastically changed his life. He was one of these radical conversions that overnight this anger turned into peace and love. And so, you know, all you guys know him. My dad's the most talkative, happy-go-lucky, just jolly guy you'd ever meet. And so for my kids, that's the Papaw they know. Like, in their minds, they've never seen Papaw angry. They've never – so they're getting to experience – the dad I never got to. And I'm not jealous about that at all. I'm so happy that, because now I can like see my dad, and you could tell that even though we've never talked about it, you can tell in his mind, it's him kind of make up for lost time. And he is so good with all his grandkids, and just, you know, it's amazing. And so it, you know, even as it wasn't a bad childhood, it it was a struggle at times, you know, as much as it was a struggle, you know, it's turned out really well for everybody, because I think it made me a better father, and now it's made my dad a better father and grandfather.
That's cool. That's great. It's a great way for that to resolve, for sure. How about you, Al? How do you think you parent differently from the way your dad was with you?
Honestly, I hope I don't. Not too much. My dad was great. He was my hero. I'm not nearly good at fixing stuff. I can tell you that. So, like, I could bring my dad my car if it was tore up, and we'd work on it, and he could fix it. I'm not that guy. I try to be more intentionally present. I always tried to have something with each of them we could do. With Carly, it was Marvel. She loves the MCU. She loves comic books, so superheroes, it was that. Andrew was working out. Laura with TV, movies, books. We and just talking when you could get her to talk. But yeah, I mean, I really tried to be, I tried to model myself after my dad as much because he was so loving. He was just there. I mean, he wasn't the most cuddly person in the world, but you never doubted that my father loved you. You just didn't. You just knew. And so, yeah, I don't, like I said, I hope I'm not too different. I hope I'm a lot like him. I hope my kids know that I love them and would do anything for them.
Well, that dovetails into my next question, too. Is there a way that you wish you were more like your dad? And, I mean, you may not, but is there something about your dad that you wish you were more like him?
I'll go. Jason's like, got to think about this for a while.
yeah, kind of like Alton, I didn't have, like, a bad childhood or anything. You know, my parents were always great to me, and growing up, I actually had three pretty big father figures in my life, my dad, my grandfather on my mother's side, and I had a stepdad. Oh, I still do. I have a stepdad, in case my mother's listening.
She's like, actually, we need to talk.
And so, you know, three very different people in my life, but kind of an overarching theme of fostering. Like my grandfather would, and I spent a lot of time at my grandfather's house, and he was a carpenter. Like he built
like Jesus.
That's right. He built both of the houses that he lived in Lumberton, and you know that's what he did for a living prior to me knowing him. So I got interested in that. So he would really foster that hands-on kind of thing. So whenever I'd go for the summers, we'd be out in his woodshop and just build things. And the last thing that I built with him was a Flying V guitar body, which I have not finished to this day, and I don't think I ever will. You know, it just kind of, I don't know if I feel right finishing it. Like, that was the last thing that he and I were able to do together. And I feel like as it is, it's complete. And my dad, you know, he coached my basketball teams, and he was fostering that kind of activity side of things. And he wanted to be there for that. And I also remember, you know, he traveled a lot for work. So whenever he'd come back from his trips, he'd bring me and my sister something. So when I used to travel for work, I would do that for my boys and kind of feel like I'm doing what my dad did, you know, because it always made me feel special. And then my stepdad, you know, he was, you know, helping me with kind of the cerebral side of things, I guess. He was always helping me with, like, my math homework or science stuff or whatever, and really helped me out with that side of what was going on in my life. So when I think of all those things, I kind of want to be like the Captain Planet of dads. By their powers combined, I am Captain Dad.
That's awesome. You're very, very blessed to have three strong father figures in your life.
Yes.
Because lots of people go through life without one. You're very blessed. That's pretty cool.
You know, I talked about my dad, you know, being further away. But I do have a stepfather who he and my mother have been together now for 25-ish years. And he came in and took care of my mother and my sister and I, you know, as in the hard times. You know, I was a high school teenager, and she was a middle schooler. And my mom has had severe heart issues throughout the years, and he's never once questioned it and just jumped right in and helped. And the one thing that he actually has taught me, and you know, I spoke about trying to be present with the kids, is my kids know him as Pawpaw. And that is, you know, they don't know him as my stepdad or anything like that. They know him as Pawpaw. And every minute those kids are around there, he devotes to them. I mean, he is, if Grace wants to swing, he'll go swing with her and push her on the swing. If Cora wants to throw ball, he'll go out there and throw ball with her. If they want to run around and play bubbles, that he'll run around and blow bubbles with them. And, you know, that's one thing that, you know, I talked about trying to be present more, that he has taught me every time I see him is like, you know, he is 70. He'll kill me if I screw this up, but I'm going to say he's in his early 70s. Okay.
There you go.
And he is still out there doing whatever they want to do, giving every minute he can to them. And if I could, you know, if I could take something away from a father figure and try to emulate that, it would be to be like that, to be present in whatever they're doing. Like you said, if they want to play ball, coach ball, if they want to learn how to program computers, get in with that with them. So I'm trying to do more of that. You know, I'm like Mike talked about the differences. I got one kid who's into everything princess and makeup and sparkly that you can think of, and I got one that's into dinosaurs and Roblox and Minecraft and sports. And so I, you know, trying to find my way and help them both through that, you know, that's what I take from him. It's just be in it. And who cares what it is, just go do it.
Mike, you got something you want to add? Sarah, what you wish you were more like your dad?
It's funny. I just thought about something that Jason was talking about, you know, his dad being in his early 70s, out just still active with the kids. And I hope I'm this way now with my dad when I'm my dad's age. My dad will turn 72 in about another week. And this past weekend was my daughter's 15th birthday. And we rented the biggest water slide you've ever seen in your life and blew it up. You know, rented it. They came in and blew it up. I mean, it was literally almost as tall as our house. It was massive. And so on Sunday, all the family came over. We wanted to eat, and we all came over to celebrate my daughter's birthday. And my 72-year-old dad went and borrowed a pair of my swim trunks and went down the slide multiple times with my daughter. And I was just sitting there. I was like, I hope at 72, number one, I'm still physically able to do that. But I hope that I still, my dad just carries now this, like, this, almost like this childlike wonder about him, you know? And maybe because it was all pent up and bottled up for so long that now he's getting to experience it. But it was just fun watching my dad just hoot and holler and come down the slide and just as, and having as much fun as my 15-year-old daughter was. And so that's one thing I saw just recently that I'm like, I hope that can be like that, you know, 30 years from now.
Hmm. Okay. So Father's Day is, well, we'll be airing this on Father's Day. So design, this is my final question. Tell me what your perfect Father's Day looks like. I mean, I think we all know how it starts. But after that, what's your perfect Father's Day?
What about how it ends?
Well, okay, if you're really good. Same. Okay, so between the beginning and the ending, what's your perfect Father's Day?
You know, mine is, I keep saying it, but just to be present with them. Like my kids, I know right now that they're already planning little stuff for Father's Day because I hear them. And they're like, you know, we got that. I got that. Dad, we got you something for Father's Day, but you can't see it. You know, stuff like that.
And you're like, it better come with a set of keys.
Right. Yeah, that's right. And, you know, I'm very blessed because my oldest, my 7-year-old, Cora, she will make something. And she will just try her hardest to make it because she wants it to be just right for you. Doesn't matter who you are. And she looks for that look on your face of joy. And my 5-year-old Grace is the bubbliest, most outgoing social butterfly. You know, I can go outside to the car and come back in the house, and she's like, Daddy! You know, and if I leave the house, she will not let me leave the house without a hug. So I think my perfect Father's Day would be to just experience that as much as I can throughout that day.
Nathan, what's a perfect Father's Day for you?
I really just like hanging out with my family. Up until a few years ago, I was working a lot, you know, in the early parts of both of my child's lives. So I kind of missed out on a lot of stuff. You know, Beck would message me or call me, whatever, and be like, oh, the boys just did this. The boys, we're going to the museum or we're going to wherever. And I'm like, man, like, I'm missing out on a lot of things. And by the time I would get home, I'd see them for half an hour, and then it'd be time for them to go to bed. So I never really got to experience their lives up until just a couple years ago. So I like to do anything that we can just be together as a family, regardless of what it is. I was thinking the other day, because we were sitting around probably watching some silly Disney movie, and we're all just on the couch, and I'm like, this is it. And then I start thinking, man, like, I really want to be more aware of times like these, because before I know it, I'm going to be remembering times like those. You go, man, I wish I would have paid more attention, or I wish I really would have soaked that in.
We'll be like Alton talking about our kids at 20 some years old.
Right.
Yeah, who are still on your couch watching your TV, eating your food. You think it's going to be over. You think you're only going to have 18 summers. Surprise.
Bonus round.
Mike, what's the perfect Father's Day for you?
And I think all the dads in here would agree. I don't know if there is a more beautiful, sweeter sound than when your kids are happy with one another. Yes. You know?
Yes.
Preach,
you
hear brother.
Them,
yes.
When you hear them laughing and they're not, I mean, there's moments that are few and far between, but when they're all like just loving on each other, you know, and just enjoying the moment, to me, that's all I want for Father's Day. Like, I just want one day of no picking on one another, no getting short with one another or whatever. Like, just, can we just have a day without no complaints? Everyone's just, you know, content, you know?
Speaking into existence.
That, like, would be my
You're
perfect.
Cramming them all into a car and headed to the beach. It ain't going to happen this year.
I'm
just
going
to tell you, don't get your hopes up. No, I'm glad you said that, because, you know, you guys are making me feel guilty, because people ask me what my perfect Mother's Day is, and I'm like, I want everybody to leave me the heck alone. I want you guys to leave and don't come back until the end of the day. Yeah, I don't want to see my children. You make me breakfast in bed, fine, but then we're done. So, Alton, what about you, your perfect Father's Day?
Yeah, pretty much like your perfect Mother's Day. Yeah, we can eat a meal together, but other than that, I mean, y'all just got to give me a day, man. Just give me a day. I just want to go throw some disc golf. I mean, we've had some good Father's Day. I mean, but the thing is, Laura's birthday is the 18th, so there's been a lot of Father's Day that we were celebrating Laura's birthday.
Yeah.
And you know what? That's part of being a dad. You learn pretty quick. You take a back seat. And, yeah, that's just the way it is. So
that's, you know, like a...
It's all good.
Growing up, whenever it was my mom's birthday, we would go to Celebration Station.
Oh, gosh, your poor
mother. For your mother's birthday.
You owe her. You yeah. owe your mom, let me just tell you.
Well, for several Jeez. Years in a row, it was Carly would pick out a movie that she wanted to see with me for Father's Day, and then, you know, she don't have a job, so it was me paying for everybody to go to the movies so we could watch a movie that she wanted to see on Father's Day, which was cool. We have similar taste in movies, so it all worked out. But, yeah, kind of like Mike, just y'all don't fight. Give me a little time to myself. And guess what? Tomorrow will be Father's Day, too, because I'll still be a father.
And that's a perfect way to wrap this up. Happy Father's Day today and every day to the guys who participated in this show. That's Nate, Jason, Mike, and my husband, Alton. And if you're a dad, or if you're someone who's taken the role of dad in someone's life, even if you're not their biological father, happy Father's Day to you. That wraps up this week's episode of Rise and Shine. We'll be back again next week to do it again. Until then, shine on, Wolf Nation.